When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi there and welcome to the Explaining History podcast, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about the Italian Marxist intellectual Antonio Gramsci. And the reason why I want to talk about Gramsci is that perhaps after Marx he's the most significant thinker on the left of the 20th century, and he's the most significant figure theoretician in terms of explaining how capitalist societies work and how they perpetuate themselves and how they remain coherent, how they stay as entities, and how the capitalist classes remain in control. And he suggested that this was done largely without violence, and set about trying to explain how this was possible. But before we look at that, let's look a little bit about who he was. He was a Sardinian, born in the late 19th century and grew up in terrific poverty. So he was born in 1891 and suffered from tuberculosis of the spine as a child. It was very sickly. By 1914, he had studied under some of the great socialist intellectuals of the liberal era before the First World War. One particular, Benedetto Croce, who would later be particularly persecuted under Mussolini, was Gramsci's mentor. Gramsci was writing at a time of growing class tension in Italy, which crystallises during and after the First World War. But he was writing at a time where the promises or the dreams, if you will, of the Risorgimento 2 decades on, by the time he was born, or 3 or 4 decades on, by 1914 or so, when he really comes of age. The promises of the Risorgimento have been largely discredited. The Risorgimento, the reunification of Italy, the rebirth of Italy, was a kind of very incomplete and failed project by and large, and it had done precious little for Italy's poor. Italy was still socially and culturally disunified between a wealthy, urbanised, industrialised north based around Piedmont, Sardinia, and a south that was progressively left behind. It was a south, really, that the architect of the Risorgimento, Count Camillo Cavour, had little desire to see incorporated into the greater Piedmontese state that he was trying to build. But it is unfortunately grafted on by the actions of Garibaldi in the 1860s. So by the time Italy is politically unified, it is not being socially unified. The answer to this, said Italian nationalists and later fascists, was war. War would unify Italy. War would make Italians out of the people who existed within the polity of Italy. And this, again, this fails to successfully occur either. All that war creates is ever greater social tensions, particularly after 1919 and the so-called mutilated peace. Gramsci, in 1914, is writing for a variety of socialist newspapers, and the advent of the First World War really focuses his thoughts as to how it is ordinary working people across Europe can be convinced and persuaded to engage in an endeavour which is so manifestly not in their interests to do so. He becomes very politically active in Turin and is chiefly interested in the organisation and education of workers. The classical Marxist analysis of the working class is that ultimately working class consciousness will develop, and a political understanding through education will emerge, which shows that the working classes are economically exploited. And Marx believed, you know, once the workers can see this, then you're likely to move towards conditions of revolution. And one of the great questions, if you listen to the Frankfurt School, the Frankfurt School recording I did a while back, you know, one of the great questions for left intellectuals after the First World War is, when there was this glorious moment where there may have been a worldwide revolution, where the working classes might overthrow the bourgeoisie, why doesn't it happen? And Gramsci would eventually come up with a number of suggestions as to what the bourgeoisie got right and the workers got wrong. During the Biennio Rosso, the two red years of 1919 and 1920, when communist insurrection seemed most likely in Italy, the working class organised itself across Italy into a series of workers' councils. The official line that was coming from Moscow, from Vladimir Lenin, who rather liked Gramsci and his revolutionary newspaper, L'Ordine Nuovo, or The New Order. The official line coming from Moscow was that the councils, the workers' councils of the Soviets, were not an end in themselves. They were merely a device for overthrowing bourgeois capitalism. Gramsci actually thought rather differently. He thought, no, they are an end in themselves. They are evidence that socialism, socialist organisation, has actually emerged, that the revolution is here, and that what is not required is a large, menacing, authoritarian state to now sweep away the Soviets, the workers' councils, and to proclaim socialism in the interests of the people. The councils themselves are socialism. Now, because you have so many European socialists in not just in Italy and or in France or Germany, but across the continent, in obeisance to Moscow, because Lenin had clearly shown the rest of Europe how it was done, a Leninist stance was predominant within the Italian Communist Party, which develops from L'Ordine Nuovo, and Gramsci, who doesn't take a Leninist stance, who doesn't believe that the councils are just a tool, he becomes quite an isolated figure within the movement. He takes a stance which is instantly not particularly popular in Moscow, but in doing so, he actually shows us that the amount of communist parties across Europe that were very quickly after 1917 willing to accept Soviet orthodoxies as to the way things should be is really quite great, and is quite significant. But by 1921, Gramsci himself has had a change of heart, when the Bienni Rosso fails, the workers' councils alone don't succeed, and they don't seize power. And within 12 months, Mussolini has managed to seize power in the 1922 March on Rome. In 22, Gramsci goes to Russia as a representative of the new Italian Communist Party. And he married a German communist in Russia, and they had their children together. The development of fascism in Italy, while Gramsci's out of the country, sees Gramsci return to Italy with instructions to try to create a popular front, a united front against Mussolini of all the other leftist parties. This would have been probably impossible under Stalin, but Lenin was able to see that the beginnings of a virulent anti-communism across Europe were emerging, and that compromise with other parties of the left was really important. Over the next 4 years, Gramsci would return to Italy. He left his family in Russia, and he presided over a divided communist party. He also becomes deeply involved as a man of letters in the power struggle between Stalin and Trotsky, essentially taking Stalin's position against Trotsky. In 1926, emergency laws are enacted following an attempt on Mussolini's life, of which there were several, and Gramsci was arrested and put in prison for 11 years, and during that period of time he became progressively more and more weak and ill, and died in 1937. And while he was a relatively young man when he died, he only died at the age of 46, his writing carries on and has an immense influence long after his death. Much of it was written in prison. He wrote 30.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
30 full notebooks while he was inside, and the kind of the canon of Gramsci writing, if you're ever interested in it, is the Gramsci's prison notebooks. And he focuses on this idea of hegemony, of cultural hegemony, and he ex- Gramsci was animated by this question. He was engaged by this question of why it is that capitalism still manages to maintain control over society, over capitalist societies, even though the capitalist classes are outnumbered, and that the revolutionary period that had begun in 1917 had lasted a very short period of time and hadn't been successful virtually anywhere else. And it was obvious to Gramsci that capitalism was much more entrenched than anyone had thought. And it wasn't doing it through force of arms, though obviously when the system is finally physically threatened, then it will. Gramsci suggested that violence wasn't the main means by how it was done. But it was done through ideology, and that the bourgeoisie, the middle classes and the upper classes, developed a hegemonic culture. It was that there is one dominant culture within a capitalist society that the working classes are forced to accept, even though it's not in a culture that really represents them or that empowers them. It is one particular worldview that is all-encompassing, hence the idea that it is hegemonic. And this sort of appears at the level of being common sense, the idea that one has to work for one's daily bread and that one has to take the conditions that an employer gives one, that the market, the workings of the market are the only way in which societies can work. These views are common sense. And of course, common sense if you're benefiting from them. But Gramsci said, well, you know, they're not necessarily common sense, but they are portrayed as being so, and that they are values that everybody can share in. Patriotism, the respect for the monarchy, unquestioning obedience, these are all seen as common sense values that, again, everybody shares. And that maintaining a status quo, again, is a kind of hegemonic notion. And that that status quo inevitably keeps the working classes powerless and impoverished. And the answer to this, Gramsci said, is that the working classes need to develop their own culture. They need to develop their own institutions, their own schools, their own libraries, their own bookshops, their own pamphlets and newspapers that tell a different story, that that present exploitation not as common sense, but as a grand strategy operated against the proletariat. And a lot of these ideas spring from Marx, but obviously Marx died before perhaps he could have articulated himself or finished off his work. Marx said that the economic relations of a society, i.e. who does the work and who gains the profits, these economic relations, the economic base of society, determines the ideological, cultural, and political and social superstructures that go on top of it, i.e. what it is the media says, what it is, how families function, how, and, you know, all other relations in society are based on the fundamental economic foundations that exist. And, you know, these are now less and less revolutionary ideas than ones which, you know, even fairly mainstream people, I think, take on board. And that these values are articulated in things like religion, culture, folklore, and that they seep into the everyday experience of all people and are naturalised and normalised to a point of being kind of unquestioned givens. And this, in Gramsci's point of view, is a kind of coercion, but he referred to it as a consented coercion. People agree to be coerced into subordinate positions within society. He says that it's only when the illusion of consent evaporates that instead violence has to replace it, the moment that consent, and the moment that hegemony really ceases to operate, that during some kind of economic or social crisis, people fully question the status quo and refuse to be bamboozled or directed or sold or culturally marshalled in a particular way, that then capitalist societies have to rely on brute force. But an over-reliance on this is an error. It is important for capitalism's mask to remain well-placed. Gramsci also was very interested in the role of intellectuals. And he took a particularly interesting dissection of this and said that ultimately all people are intellectuals, that people intellectualise things all day long. You know, the process of thinking in abstract terms is an intellectual undertaking. And this is something that all human beings basically do. And that it's possible for there to be no division between who we think of as intellectuals, you know, the supposed great and the good, and ordinary people. And the fact that there is this distinction, the modern intellectual is really a kind of a crafter of discourse, somebody who, instead of enabling a development of thought at a grassroots level, a development of working class thought, really guides the discussion about whatever it may be, society, religion, war, gender, economics and what have you, in particular directions. And so the job of the intellectual is really to safeguard discourse within a society, to safeguard the use of thought and argument and debate. So there are very important figures in the hegemonic system, and they produce kind of hegemony by creating acceptable limits to debate. You know, yes, they might be the sorts of people who say, yes, society should be fairer, but we can't go redistributing wealth to the poor, for heaven's sake. You know, that would be madness. You know, that capitalism, sometimes it does bad things, but it's the best worst system we've got. So, and that helps to neatly kind of snip the argument at either end. And again, once working class intellectuals are required here, says Gramsci, he says we need to have a working class culture that creates working class discourses, arguments, solutions and debates. And this needs to necessitate a working class education. And he was very, he believed, perhaps as a result of his own education, that quite a tough and demanding education for working class boys was necessary, and that they would need to be really kind of rigorously schooled and disciplined to really get them ready to fight for socialism. And the critique of modern capitalism as well was very important. In his view, modern capitalism was in the hands of the bourgeoisie by allowing the left, the workers, to have certain key concessions. So trade unions were a pressure valve within society, so that the plebs could let off steam, in essence, and that they could have their own sort of fairly ineffective protests, and be given a few concessions, whereas the main commanding heights of the economy are still in the hands of the bourgeoisie. And this meant that the new managerialism of the early 20th century, Fordism, and the Taylorist time and motion assembly line methods were means of controlling and guiding not just the proletariat so that they could work more efficiently in the interests of profit, but also it was a means of kind of depoliticizing the workplace. There's nothing quite as spirit-crushing as being on the production line, really, to drag the revolution, to sort of suck the revolutionary zeal out of you and to return you to an atomized state of kind of what Eric Fromm would refer to as alienation, where the individual is completely alienated from the process of production and is in fact dominated by the process of production itself. So a new working class culture and the development of working class intellectuals and the development of the control of the means of production were all the means by which Gramsci said that the revolution would be potential and potentially able to occur. So these were kind of continuations of Marxist thought. This is why I was saying that he is, you know, the next most influential thinker after Marx. They're continuations of Marxist thought and kind of finishing off where it could be argued that Marx had been unable to, answering the questions that Marx did not live long enough to address. Anyway, I hope you found that interesting. Sorry I've been a bit preoccupied for a week or so. I'll be back in a few days, hopefully, with some of my annual exam tips and advice for students. Anyway, have yourselves a lovely weekend, and I'll speak to you on the next Explaining History podcast. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.